And we're actually going to be kind of following along the journey of Jesus as we did last evening. As we talked about, he was making his way to Jerusalem. He stopped in Jericho. And as he entered Jericho, he makes a stop as he sees little Zacchaeus trying to get a better position to see Jesus. And we talked about how pivotal that was that he stopped there, seeing how much Zacchaeus was truly hoping that all the things undoubtedly that he had no doubt heard and anticipated about Jesus did come true to experience salvation for himself. Tonight, we're going to see as Jesus is actually leaving Jericho, he makes another stop. And this time it is because someone is refusing to let Jesus go by without making a stop for something that he desperately needs him to do for him. We're going to look at that here this evening. We're going to start in Mark chapter 10. Mark chapter 10, verse 46. It reads, "Then they came to Jericho, and as he was leaving Jericho with his disciples and a large crowd, a blind beggar named Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, was sitting by the road. When he heard that it was Jesus, the Nazarene, he began to cry out and say, 'Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me.' Many were sternly telling him to be quiet, but he kept crying out all the more, 'Son of David, have mercy on me.' Jesus stopped and said, 'Call him here.' So they called the blind man, saying to him, 'Take courage, stand up, he is calling for you.' Throwing aside his cloak, he jumped up and came to Jesus. And answering him, Jesus said, 'What do you want me to do for you?' And the blind man said to him, 'Rabboni, I want to regain my sight.' And Jesus said to him, 'Go, your faith has made you well.' Immediately he regained his sight and began following him on the road." Kind of interesting here that almost gets prevented from even having this miracle granted to him. He really has to kind of fight for it. And we love that faith of Bartimaeus. He is certainly at a point of destitution in such his life. He cannot afford to let Jesus go by. And what a great lesson that is for so many of us here to maybe present that. You really cannot afford to let the moments of Jesus to pass us by without making sure we have full access to the blessings he needs and desires to impart to us. But nonetheless, it's kind of interesting. Did you catch that the crowd initially was telling him to just be quiet? And it wasn't even just kind of a casual, could you kind of keep it down, Bartimaeus? We'd like to hear some things Jesus has to say. So they sternly told him to be quiet. As I read that, I just kind of flashed back a little bit in my life. When's the last time you remember someone sternly telling you to be quiet? I sometimes have flashbacks. My mother, maybe faces my mother had made at me when she was. It was sternly, Daniel, it's time to be quiet. This is not the time to be making commotion or a fuss. And I would dare say that most of us, whenever we had someone maybe sternly, maybe making the face at us, very angrily telling us it's time to be quiet, most of the time that does almost cause us to kind of step back a little bit, maybe kind of realize maybe I'm getting a little out of control here and it is time for me to settle down. Bartimaeus doesn't do that. Not only does Bartimaeus refuse to listen to people actually sternly telling him, "Be quiet, Bartimaeus, get out of here, you're a nuisance, you're a pest, leave him alone." It says Bartimaeus all the more cries out almost even louder, recognizes he sees something and he understands something about Jesus that sadly the crowd that has gathered to follow Jesus totally misses. And what I want to focus on this evening are three things that I find amazing that a blind man could see. Three things that blind Bartimaeus could actually see that all those with perfect 20/20 vision totally missed. And then to ask ourselves the question, can we sometimes, even though maybe we feel we have perfect vision, maybe even perfect spiritual vision, can we sometimes fall prey to totally missing the picture of what it's all about? Bartimaeus is a great lesson and example for us, and I've come to truly appreciate, and I love Bartimaeus for what he shows us what truly following Jesus is all about. And really was a great reminder to remind so many people who clung to him to remember what it's all about. To really gain an appreciation for what it is Bartimaeus teaches these people, I want to pay attention to verse 51. Notice what Jesus says in verse 51. Notice the phrase. Jesus says, "What do you want me to do for you?" Now, we need to backtrack just a few verses in the same chapter because you notice Jesus says the exact same phrase to a different group of people. Over in the same chapter, back up to verse 36. What does Jesus say there? He offers the exact same opportunity. In verse 36, he says, "What do you want me to do for you?" That's very important for us in this text, in this study. Note two occasions, Jesus says the exact same phrase, two different requests, and only one of them is granted. Jesus makes it wide open. I understand you have a desire. What do you want me to do for you? And notice there's going to be two different requests, but only one request is given, and it happens to be Bartimaeus. Let's back up a little bit and find the context. Well, what was the occasion of the first group of people, and what is it that they were asking, and why is it not granted? Let's look at this here, Mark chapter 10, beginning in verse 32. Jesus again restating what his purpose was. It says in verse 32, they were on the road going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus was walking on ahead of them, and they were amazed, and those who followed were fearful. And again, he took the 12 aside and began to tell them what was going to happen to him, saying, "Behold, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered to the chief priests and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and will hand him over to the Gentiles. They will mock him and spit on him and scourge him and kill him. And 3 days later, he will rise again." In essence, Jesus is reestablishing again what he always constantly reminded those who were eager to learn from him. What is his true purpose? To be a servant. And he is going to put on the ultimate servant's attire by allowing his even clothes to be stripped of him and his dignity to be totally taken away from him and to allow his enemies to crucify him on a cross on behalf of the sins of mankind. He establishes again, this is what this is all about. This is all about meeting the needs of the destitute, meeting the needs of those who have fallen so greatly and fallen so far in depravity and wickedness and sinfulness that even Jesus himself, in the midst of great wickedness, cried out to his Father, "Be merciful, forgive them, for they know not what they do." And it's interesting that in this context, there is a request made in verse 35. Verse 35, James and John, the two sons of Zebedee, came up to Jesus saying, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." And here's the phrase, verse 36. He said to them, "What do you want me to do for you?" They said to him, "Grant that we may sit one on your right and one on your left in your glory." But Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you are asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink or to be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized?" They said to him, "We are able." And Jesus said to them, "The cup that I drink, you shall drink, and you shall be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized. But to sit on my right or on my left, this is not mine to give, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared." And we recognize again this misconception that the struggle for his even immediate disciples to grab a hold of that concept that following Jesus means stripping yourself of your own pride, your own agenda, your own desires, and being the ultimate servant for the needy. They can't grasp that still. They're looking at the glory Jesus is about to have. They're thinking about him being seated in Jerusalem. That's where all this glory is going to be finally anticipated and performed. And they want to be right there in the middle of it, right there in the middle where Jesus is, where I can be seen and I can be recognized for my talent, to be recognized for Jesus needs someone like me and his team. And isn't it wonderful how close I am to this prophesied king? And Jesus has to humble them, and Jesus has to bring them back down to reality of what serving Jesus is all about. in verse 41. It says, hearing this, the ten began to feel indignant with James and John, calling them to himself. Jesus said to them, you know that those who are recognized as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them. But it is not this way among you. But whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you shall be slave of all. It's reminding them, I'm going to demonstrate to what extent I'm leading you in service. I'm being crucified, shedding my blood for undeserved sinners, that they might be elevated, that they might be brought to glory. I'm going to sacrifice my glory for them. And here are the immediate disciples who have been attracted, no doubt, to the wonderful things Jesus has accomplished and all the attention he has garnered and gathered, and they just simply want to be a part of that for their own sake. And they miss the point. So again, notice in verse 36, what does Jesus say? What do you want me to do for you? A very gaudy, elaborate request is made, and he doesn't give it to them. Same statement is made a few verses later to a different person. Bartimaeus is summoned to Jesus, and what does Jesus say to him? What do you want me to do for you? And Bartimaeus' request is granted. Same statement. Verse 51, when Bartimaeus is summoned by Jesus, again, the crowd almost amazed that he's not listening to them. He's not shut up at all. He's just making more of a fuss, bringing more of attention to himself, and Jesus actually wants to talk to him. And he says, tell him to come here. Verse 50, throwing aside his cloak, he jumped up, came to Jesus, and answering him, Jesus said, what do you want me to do for you? And the blind man said to him, Rabboni, I want to regain my sight. And Jesus said to him, go, your faith has made you well. Immediately he regained his sight and began following him on the road. One of the first things that I'm always moved by, what Bartimaeus, even in his blindness, was able to see, of what he demonstrates, even the immediate disciples of Jesus failed to see it, as we see there in those previous verses. He saw his own worth, and he saw that people like him, are the people Jesus and people who follow Jesus are sent to serve. He recognized he is in the position where, yes, he is humbled, he is thirsty, he's hungering for what Jesus has to offer. He recognized the lowly position he's in, but despite that, he sees the value of where he's at. Now notice, this is in contrast to the disciples. Disciples almost want a recognition of their value, recognition of their worth, but they're in a different position. They've been given tools and the assets and the teaching, and they have already begun to follow Jesus, and Jesus is now commissioning them to serve people like Bartimaeus. So the ones who were already following Jesus, who were wanting more important stature for themselves, it's not granted to them. At least Jesus says it's not for me even to give that, and nonetheless nothing was really done about it at that time. And now they have to witness. Even when most of the crowds were telling Bartimaeus to shut up, this is not your time. We're doing very important big things for Jesus. We're on our way to Jerusalem. We're on our way for the king to pronounce his authority. We don't have time for people like you. And Bartimaeus refuses to look at himself that way. That's what they want to remind him. Bartimaeus, do you know who you are? You're just a poor blind beggar. You're going to be here tomorrow. You're going to be here. You've been here all the times before. We have some bigger fish to fry, so to speak. This is Jesus. And Jesus reminding the people, saying, wait a minute. Who wants my attention? Bring him here. Bring him front and center. Tell him to come here. And the people almost have to change their attitude. Well, get up, Bartimaeus. Go ahead, he wants to talk to you after all. And the spotlight shines right on him. And I find it interesting, Jesus says the exact same phrase he said to some proud disciples who had their own request. It wasn't given. Bartimaeus's is. Reminding them, we are here for those people. We are here to humble ourselves when we begin taking on the leadership roles. When we begin being equipped by Jesus, as we follow Him and grow more in our understanding, all of it is for the sole purpose of serving the lowly, serving those who need mercy. And Bartimaeus shows he sees that he is deserving. He deserves God's attention. Now, we don't deserve in such a way that we've done anything for it, but he recognizes the position he's in merits or automatically allows him front and center to allow the Son of God to show all of his attention on him. And he sees it, he recognizes it, and he demands it. He wants it, and he's not letting Jesus get away from it before he experiences this great act of kindness from him. I love how he sees that. And it begs the question, how did he know that? Why was he so unwilling to listen to the people? Again, I mentioned before, you just put yourself in a position the last time someone told you sternly to shut your mouth. Anybody remember the last time when somebody told you that and you didn't listen to them? What the occasion might have been that you said, I don't care what you tell me to be quiet. I am going to get even louder. Must have been some serious situation, right? Bartimaeus is so sure. Not only did I not be quiet, I have to get louder. I gather it's from the statement he makes to Jesus. Did you catch what he calls him? He didn't say Jesus of Nazareth. He said Jesus, Son of David. He recognizes what kind of a king Jesus is. That's why all the people are surrounding him at this time. All the attention is building up of the thoughts of what if this truly is our king. And James and John, they get their heads filled up with, oh yeah, we'd like to sit on the left and right hand side of the great king. And what that means for us to be close to a king like that. And Jesus is trying to humble his own disciples in this very moment while elevating a poor blind beggar like Bartimaeus, a nobody. Some of the rest of the crowd thinks, you're a nuisance, you got to get out of here. This kind of thing, we're talking about the Passover, we're talking about very important, high, important spiritual things that God's going to accomplish through the king. And Bartimaeus says, I'm going to tell you, I know he's a king. And I know what kind of a king he is. But Jesus, Son of David, use your power to serve me. He takes ownership of it. He knows these people like him is who the king has come to reign over, to serve, to help. One way I know he had to have known this is I think back to something that Jesus made known when he was given the prophet to read from the prophet Isaiah. Remember when he was in the synagogue and they were reading scripture? And they handed him the scroll and they asked him to read from it. It says he found the part in Isaiah which said something very interesting that I have to believe Bartimaeus, even though he couldn't see anything in front of him. I have to imagine he was a pretty good Bible student to make some connections that some of Jesus' closest disciples were missing. Because listen to what Jesus said in Luke chapter 4. In Luke chapter 4, we have this amazing occasion where all this attention surrounding the important high Jesus, all the miracles he's doing, all the attention surrounding him, and they want him to read from the prophet. And Jesus does so, and I love the passage he chooses to read. Luke chapter 4 and verse 17 says, and he took the book of the prophet Isaiah, or the book was handed to him, and he opened the book, found the place where it was written, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me because He anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. God has elevated, chosen, rightly deemed me the King, the seed of David to do what? To serve. And His own disciples, even on the way to Jerusalem, can't see it. And even when Bartimaeus, the very kind of person he was sent to serve, they're telling him, get out of the way. And Jesus stops everything. He says, no. Tell him to come here. What do you want me to do for you? He gets it. I want to see. Because notice what it says here. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because He anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives. And notice the next phrase. And recovery of sight to the blind. When Bartimaeus cried out, Jesus, Son of David, he's making reference. He knows, by all means, he will give me my sight back. That's what he came to do. Are you kidding me? I'm a nobody. I'm just a poor blind beggar. I'm the very person that he came to be king for. And Jesus, over and over again, trying to tell us, listen, we're not going to rule like the way you understand most people rule. We are going to be the servants of mercy. That's how we're going to rule. We're going to take all of the authority that God has for forgiveness, for salvation, for redemption, and we're going to gladly bring front and center all those who are broken, all those who are sinners who need to be restored, and we're going to serve them. To set free those who are oppressed. And I love verse 19. Verse 19 kind of encapsulates the whole spirit of what this movement, this preaching is all about, to proclaim the favorable year of the Lord. That's a reference to the year of Jubilee. That was the favorable year of the Lord. The favorable year of the Lord, that 50th year. What a beautiful year that was. In the book of Leviticus, we find out just how wonderful the year of the Lord is and the year of Jubilee. A lot of great things happen. Prisoners set free, slaves released, debts forgiven, property returned to original owners. When Jesus says, I will proclaim the favorable year of the Lord, it was about release, redemption, returning honor to whom honor had been stricken away from in the most gracious fashion that God could put on display. And what's amazing is that somehow, somewhere along the way, the very disciples of Jesus trying to put that year on display with how many individuals he has honored, how many individuals he visited, like Zacchaeus we looked at last night, people like him who has come to deliver. Do we sometimes miss the point as well that we who have become close to Jesus, who have been commissioned by him, who have become equipped by him in areas of whether it's leadership or growth in some spiritual fashion where we're able to be used by him, to never forget the positions God gives to us is ultimately to serve the blind, begging Bartimaeuses of our society. Those who spiritually are so weak and so crushed and so overwhelmed by the weight of their sins. Are we dismissing them when we hear their cries? Something for us to think about. I think that's what Jesus was trying to hopefully help his own disciples ask that question. Think about what Paul himself said as he went about preaching, as we think about all the journeys he made. He made this amazing statement. Also to realize that Paul looked at himself as a servant to those who were lost and recognized the kind of people, mostly the kind of people, who tended to respond to the gospel. And he says in 1 Corinthians 1:26, consider your calling, brethren, that there were not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble. In fact, Jesus himself said, I thank you, Lord, that you have hidden these things from the wise and you've revealed them to the babes, those who were lowly, those were so humble and meek in their own demeanor and makeup that they could easily see. They would grab it. They would be the ones who would cry, wait a minute, there's mercy, there's grace, there's forgiveness, there's blessing for me, and would cry out as Bartimaeus has. That's what I love about this picture of Bartimaeus showing us and reminding us. Sometimes we talk about casting seed, and yes, we should always be looking for opportunities and cast a seed no matter where it is. But have you ever considered what the good ground really is? Well, Jesus reminds us what really is good ground. Well, maybe we're finding some rocky soil or finding some areas where thorns and thistles pop up. And he says sometimes the good ground is, well, Luke 14:21 gives us a clue. He He says, go out at once into the streets and lanes of the city and bring in here the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. Bartimaeus gets front and center, and he gets access to the question, Bartimaeus, what do you want me to do for you? And he gets his request granted to solidify in our minds, that's what the king has come here for. He is the king of mercy. He is the king of compassion. He is the king of serving. Have we been maybe blind like the disciples in chapter 10 were? Are we sometimes so consumed about our own position, our own how we look in the eyes of others, securing a way that others look up to us or need us, rather than thinking, who among the destitute is crying out and we can heed them? Jesus demonstrated and showed that in Bartimaeus, such a wonderful example of someone who got that request granted. So not only could he see, he saw his worth, he saw how he related to the king, the Son of David. He makes the connection. The Son of David has not come to elevate himself in some lofty position, but rather to strip himself of his own honor and to elevate and esteem the needy and the lost. And so, needy beggar Bartimaeus, he almost expects it's going to happen. He has that faith. And Jesus says it's because his faith, he knew that he was certainly someone who Jesus would stop for. And something else he was able to see, I love how Bartimaeus is able to see that there was power in Jesus. I love this. I love how Bartimaeus is like us, really, in a lot of circumstances. I don't know about you, sometimes you ever get a little, maybe get jealous of the people that got to see Jesus firsthand with their own eyes and got to see the miracles and watch him walking on the water, watch, you know, as we talked about the four men who lowered the paralytic and actually see a guy get up and start walking again. So I feel like I got gypped. So wouldn't it be great if I could actually see that stuff? And then I remember there's Bartimaeus. He never saw any of it. Where did he get that faith from? Never saw a single miracle. He heard at least some teaching. He made some connections based on statements made about Jesus. And he was able to come to this amazing faith where now he sees that there's power in Jesus and he has the kind of faith to seek after it. I want to regain my sight. Amazing. He sees that there is power. And I love the attitude of Bartimaeus. Turn back over to Mark chapter 10. I love the physical description of him. Again, he's very bold. Again, that's what I love, because if you make the connection in the same chapter, but again, two groups of people, what connects that statement, the similar statement, what do you want me to do for you? What do you want me to do for you? Both are very bold statements, bold requests. Only one request gets granted. It's a very bold one, but it's about who it comes from. The bold requests get deemed for those who are the humble, who are hungering and thirsting for that elevation, for that need, for that attention, that needs some help and needs the blessing of the Lord. He gets it. And notice the attitude. Mark chapter 10, beginning of verse 48, it says, many were sternly telling him to be quiet. But he kept crying out all the more, Son of David, have mercy on me. And Jesus stopped and said, call him here. So they called the blind man, saying to him, take courage, stand up. He is calling for you. I love verse 50. It's almost as if he totally changes the demeanor and physical position he was in as a beggar. As a beggar, you almost get used to the thing of like, well, whatever you have on you. You know, you can't be choosy. Beggars can't be choosers, right? You can't be very demanding. And beggars get used to people overlooking them and not maybe giving them much. So you get used to scraps, anything. Remember Lazarus, the poor man? He was hoping at least for maybe, you know, some small table scrap. We would have loved that. But notice what happens. Bartimaeus, when Jesus has him, he throws aside his cloak. He stands up. He's not down on the position that he would be typically, like, begging for just whatever he can get. It's almost as if he decides, I'm not begging anymore. I now have the opportunity to get a bold blessing. And it goes big. I want my sight back. In other words, I want to totally change the situation of my life that will totally change me from being a poor beggar, and I no longer have to see myself that way. I no longer have to live that way. He wants to change everything about his life. That's what he's asking for. Give me the ability to see that I no longer have to live this way. That's bold. That is big. That said, oh, if you could just maybe give me a few table scraps, maybe some better food than I've had before. I would love that. If it's okay for you, merciful David. He doesn't do that. He says, I want everything. I want everything changed. Do we have that kind of faith? That kind of faith that those kinds of needs can be granted? Turn over to Luke chapter 11. Luke chapter 11. Jesus himself tells us and almost implores us to be bold about what it is that we ask for. But we also have to keep the context in mind, and we have to keep the perspective right. Because sometimes, as we learn from James and John, certainly when we go bold for selfish reasons, we go bold for just our own personal gain. As even James reminds us, why are you not getting your prayers answered? Because you want it for yourself, to spend it on your lusts, on your pleasures. You're an enemy of God because you love the world. You want those kinds of things. Really, Bartimaeus's request, we're going to later find out, was very noble. And Luke tells us that there are some big, noble things we are told to ask for. Luke chapter 11. Luke chapter 11, beginning in verse 9. He says, so I say to you, ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and it will be opened to you. Bartimaeus did, and he got it. For everyone who asks, receives. And he who seeks, finds. And to him who knocks, it will be opened. Now, suppose one of you fathers is asked by his son for a fish. He will not give him a snake instead of a fish, will he? Or if he asks for an egg, he will not give him a scorpion, will he? If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your heavenly Father give the Holy Spirit to those who ask him? Did you catch what he wants to give to us? To give us of his Spirit. He wants to give poor beggars like us in our sinful condition the ability to be able to have the comfort of knowing that the Spirit of God actually dwells in us by faith. That ability to say that my sins are forgiven as I repent and turn away from serving this world and serve him. I am given the ability to now change how I see myself and how God sees me. Just by giving us that Spirit. Notice in Romans chapter 8, he tells a little bit about this Spirit. What's the nature of getting this Spirit that changes so much of us? Turn to Romans chapter 8. Well, this is the part, I believe, of what it's intended to be displayed and what it is that we can ask for and should be asking for that he's gladly going to give to us. But Romans chapter 8, notice what he says in verse 12. He talks about the ability to walk as the Lord walked. The ability to be strengthened, to be able to live in a way that pleases and honors him. He says in verse 12, so then, brethren, we are under obligation not to the flesh to live according to the flesh. For if you are living according to the flesh, you must die. But if by the Spirit you are putting to death the deeds of the body, you will live. For all who are being led by the Spirit of God, these are sons of God. For you have not received a spirit of slavery leading to fear again, but you have received a spirit of adoption as sons, by which we cry out, Abba, Father. The Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we are children of God. Words, when we plead, at least the powerful leading of the Spirit, the character, the strength of God in his word, the teaching, the admonition, the development that he is only through the Spirit, through the word. When we cling and we ask for that, not only does he lead us, it says, and give us the ability to no longer be kind of the blind beggars for spiritual righteousness, but we begin to develop that. And also something else happens because of His mercy, because of His grace. Even as we're trying to get better and grow, even in that development, how do we get to see ourselves? It says, I get to call God my Father as adopted by Him when my spirit agrees with His spirit. Which when I'm being led by the Spirit, when I'm being filled by the Spirit, when I'm being filled with His righteousness, being filled with His love, being filled with all those things that shape me and lead me, and even in that development, in my own weaknesses, I get to say, God is my Father. And verse 17, and if children, heirs also, heirs of God and fellow heirs with Christ, if indeed we suffer with Him, so that we may also be glorified with Him. In other words, just as Bartimaeus went bold and was essentially saying, I want to be able to change the way I see myself. When we're bold about seeking the spiritual leadership and the spiritual development, to be led by the Spirit, he says, when our spirit agrees with His spirit, you get to change how you see yourself as God sees you. You're His child. You're His beloved. You're His heir. What could be better than that? What could be bigger than that? And Bartimaeus is going to show us how truly satisfied he is with this request, this great, big, powerful gift given to him. I want to regain my sight. And truly, I believe that's something all of us can always seek to ask. I believe in many ways that's what the Lord was getting at in that chapter in Luke about asking for the Spirit. Asking for a spiritual vision that He might wipe away our own selfishness, wipe out our own pride, wipe out our own selfish desires, that we might learn to see that we need to be servants and can develop a servant's heart and truly be led by the Spirit in that way. But here Bartimaeus gets his sight back, his life is changed, and something else he is able to see I find truly remarkable. Bartimaeus is able to see the value in just knowing Him. In just knowing Him. Because notice something does change in his life dramatically. And it starts with getting his sight back. But he realizes it's so much bigger than that. Something else has totally changed. And because of the mercy and because of the power of Christ, he has now become a changed individual in many other ways. And we're going to look at that and go back to Mark chapter 10 and see the results. Mark chapter 10, beginning in verse 50. Again, he says, throwing aside his cloak, he jumped up and came to Jesus. And answering him, Jesus said, what do you want me to do for you? And the blind man said to him, Rabboni, I want to regain my sight. And Jesus said to him, go, your faith has made you well. And he doesn't exactly just go anywhere. He goes all right. He goes knowing that he's never, ever, ever going to leave the side of Jesus ever again because he starts walking with Him. Immediately he regained his sight and began following Him on the road. And I'm really moved by that because if I were to consider myself maybe in Bartimaeus' situation, if my life was basically dictated by needing somebody to pick me up, maybe carry me, transport me by the side of a road somewhere where there's heavy traffic going by. That's my day-to-day life. When's it time for you to pick me up and take me where I need to set up in front of people to look at me in my situation and for me to beg that people at least look at me and have some sympathy on me. Say, well, this guy can't take care of himself, so if you have something you could spare, could you please give it to me? If I could have something that would take that away, I don't know about you, but I think the first thing on my mind, I might be tempted to say, well, great, I no longer have to live that way. I can now maybe pursue some business enterprise. I can pursue some other way of life where I can make some money for myself. I no longer have to be poor anymore, and I can just actually have a little bit of pride and some self-esteem for myself, have some things that truly belong to me that I've built for myself, and I have the ability to do it. What I love about this is, Bartimaeus is essentially living in poverty. When he decides to follow Jesus, you know, that really doesn't change much because Jesus himself, when he told other people when to follow him, I just let you know what you're getting into. I don't have anywhere to lay my head. If you're looking for some big change financially in this whole relationship, I'll warn you about that. You're going to be shocked. Yes, they had people take care of Jesus, and they poured in funds for him, but a lot of that stuff also went to take care of the needy and the poor. We find in many places where they were used to doing that. Bartimaeus is content with his financial situation. He's not trying to better himself in another physical way. He's now realized if the power of Jesus is able to do something like this to change me so dramatically, what else do I need? I have everything I could ever ask for in Jesus, and I'm not leaving. I'm following him the rest of the way. And in many ways, as we talked about on Sunday and other lessons, remember, anytime someone decides to follow Jesus, Jesus makes it known, I'm going to train you to be a recruiter, a fisher of men. And in this sense, Bartimaeus' line of work doesn't really change much, because he was begging for food, begging for money. Now he's better. But I want to look at a phrase Paul used for how he would plead to the lost to accept the gospel. Turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 5. 2 Corinthians chapter 5. Remember what Paul said, what his approach was when he had an audience of individuals who would at least hear the gospel? This is what he said. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 20. Therefore, we are ambassadors for Christ, as though God were making an appeal through us. We beg you. We beg you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God. Bartimaeus is going to be pretty good at that. He was a beggar most of his life. Just changed what he's begging for. He's now, if he's going to follow Jesus, no doubt the conversation is going to somewhere along the way. We're going to train you like all these others to be, you're going to be fisher of men. And the phrase I love that Paul uses is, it is a pleading. It is, would you please consider? We beg you, take the time to consider the important elements and the powerful nature of what the gospel can do for you. And Bartimaeus, what a great example. He's going to be as someone who's personally changed by his interaction with Jesus. And it's going to be easy for Bartimaeus to keep that humble nature. And what a great example Bartimaeus would be for James and John and the other apostles. As Jesus reminds them, remember, this is who we stop on the road for. And Bartimaeus is going to now look for other people that they can stop and say, let's see what we can do for you. The best way for us to truly appreciate and recognize the true nature of who we are, again, is by Jesus using that word, we are the slave of all, to serve, to lower ourselves. Why? Because of the true value and the greatness of what it is to know Jesus, to be impacted by Jesus, by the gospel. And again, what more could we ever ask for in this life but to give ourselves wholly in devotion to bringing others back to him? One more time, let's go back there to Mark chapter 10. Again, just want to see again the contrast. Mark chapter 10 and verse 36. He said to them, what do you want me to do for you? They said to him, grant that we may sit one on your right and one on your left in your glory. A few verses down in verse 47. When he that is blind begging Bartimaeus heard that it was Jesus the Nazarene, he began to cry out and say, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. Many were sternly telling him to be quiet, but he kept crying out all the more, Son of David, have mercy on me. And Jesus stopped and said, call him here. So they called the blind man, saying to him, take courage, stand up. He is calling for you. Throwing aside his cloak, he answered him, Jesus said, what do you want me to do for you? And the blind man said to him, Rabboni, I want to regain my sight. And Jesus said to him, go, your faith has made you well. Immediately he regained his sight and began following him on the road. Changed for the better, changed his life, and now eager to follow him and be used in service to beg for Jesus, how others can be saved and helped as well who need that. So what a blessing it is that we have this opportunity to do so, and let's always cherish that. And as we, what a great week this is for us as we, the classes downstairs, what a great theme that is. And I know, appreciate Brian letting me know. He said, well, you can pretty much choose whatever I wanted throughout this week, and it may not fit exactly where everybody was, but hopefully tomorrow night we're actually going to look at Priscilla and Aquila, and hopefully have some things that will match up a little bit close to some of the themes that are going on downstairs. But truly always grateful and thankful for, just as Bartimaeus demonstrates, what a blessing it is to be useful in his service. And let us truly always see ourselves as those servants, willing to do whatever we can for the gospel. Do we have 5 more minutes? Okay. Maybe one more passage just kind of sum everything up for us. But there in the Gospel of Luke, after Jesus has been nailed to the cross, after all the horrific things that he does do, an amazing level of service to be the slave of all, to die for our sins, he amazingly is resurrected from the tomb, and he commissions all those disciples. And I don't know where Bartimaeus is in here, but we do know there are several that are among them, but that have been trained by Jesus. And notice how he kind of reminds them again, this is all about serving the needs of the lost. And he kind of capitalizes that on this in this moment at the end of Luke. Let's read it in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 24. Chapter 24. Beginning in verse 44, he says, "Now he said to them, these are my words which I spoke to you while I was still with you, that all things which are written about me in the law of Moses and the prophets and the Psalms must be fulfilled. Then he opened their minds to understand the scriptures, and he said to them, thus it is written that the Christ would suffer and rise again from the dead the third day." Remember, that's the first phrase we looked at, Mark chapter 10, when he reminds the disciples why he's going to Jerusalem. Here he recaps on that. This is what happened. He would suffer and die and be raised again the third day. Verse 47, for what purpose? That repentance for forgiveness of sins would be proclaimed in his name to all the nations, beginning from Jerusalem. So starting in Jerusalem, years and years and years later, it reached Payton City, West Virginia. Because of faithful servants who recognize, like Bartimaeus recognized, that there are those who need. And when we are employed by Jesus or enlisted by him, and we faithfully join in all of the faithful duties of a Christian, we become the servants, willing to serve those who are lost. And what a blessing it is for us to consider that we're simply carrying on that same mission that started in Jerusalem, that we see Paul and Barnabas and so many others spread throughout so many other parts of the world. And it is continuing to go today, so long as faithful Christians still hold on to that spirit of being the slave and the servant of all to the blind, begging Bartimaeuses who are crying out for mercy. And it's a privilege for us to grant that to them. And thank you so much for the way you've listened and followed along here this evening.